Okay.
We're going.
We're going. It didn't give me an option to turn on transcripts, but that's all right.
That's fine.
That would have been nice to have. Hey, everybody.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. We decided to do this after a long time. And yeah, so I've been working at a couple of jobs where it was, I don't want to say frowned upon, but extracurricular activities were not necessarily encouraged. So if I wanted to give a conference talk, I had to clear it and get approval and, you know, show my slides and make changes and things like that. And so I didn't even bother asking for permission to do a podcast because they would have wanted to listen to it. They would have gone through it. They would have asked me to edit out all my jokes. So it would have been, it wouldn't have been good.
Yeah. That it's probably a good idea. It probably would have been more trouble than it would have been worth.
I think it would. But anyway, the good news the good news is I got laid off last month. So now I can record all the podcasts I want to, give all the conference talks.
Show
my face, so to speak. I don't think that has anything to do with the fact that it's now a video cast. That's just the technology is better than it was a year and a half ago. And so, you know, I decided maybe we should get with the times. And, you know, it's more fun to talk to people when you have video and eye contact and everything. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's one of my big pieces of news is that I got laid off and I'm jobless. So if you want to hire me, reach out. The other big piece of news, because I think we haven't done a podcast in a long time,
since August of 2020, I looked.
Right. So in June of 2021, I moved to Texas. So I'm no longer in Seattle. I'm in Texas. I live outside San Antonio. And yeah, life is good. We like it here.
The Hill Country?
The Texas Hill Country, they call it.
I have driven through there from a friend of mine. I went to a conference in Austin, and a friend of mine who lives between Austin and San Antonio said, I live between San Antonio and Austin. You should fly to San Antonio. I'll pick you up. You can stay over at our place and I'll show you around. And then we drove up to Austin together. And so I got a good tour of Hill Country, probably April time period. So everything was green and it was a really nice drive.
Yeah, it's really pleasant down here. We in some ways, it was not like a well thought out move. Like it was somewhat random. The company I was working at the time had a San Antonio office, and we knew for sure we wanted to get out of Seattle. So we're just like, okay, I guess San Antonio it is. We flew down for a week and checked it out just to make sure that we could live here. But but it turns out that one, we really like it here. Two, we got extremely lucky in our remote Zoom house hunting. So we bought a house that we'd never seen. Other than through Zoom tours. What a world to live in, right? And you know, we had like the realtor walking around the houses with you know, Zoom on the phone and looking, and we bought a house that we'd never seen. And it's worked out super well. The neighborhood that we live in is awesome. The part of town we live in is awesome. It's super lucky.
Yeah.
It could have gone real badly.
Well, I guess what else do you need when you're buying a house besides getting a visual and then getting a trustworthy inspector in, right? If it goes through an actual inspection, you should feel pretty confident that anything that you wouldn't see behind the walls would be caught, right?
Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a 15-year-old house, and 15 years, it turns out, is when things start breaking. So we've had, you know, since we've been here, the oven died. I've had the air conditioning repair guy out three times for three different issues. Air conditioning is pretty important down here. I've got him on my phone. We text back and forth. Mm-hmm. The deck is falling apart. So I actually bought a miter saw so I can miter some deck boards and put them back there. Cool.
Nice.
Yeah. We'll see how well that works out for me. But so it's not perfect. I mean, it's good, but like things are breaking. But the thing that's hard to get from the Zoom is like, what is the feel of the neighborhood? What are the people in the neighborhood like?
Yeah.
You know, what's nearby? you know, how convenient is it to things? And so it's been really good on those angles.
Yeah, I mean, what's the, how far are you from what you'd call town or downtown or something?
From downtown, we're probably about 30 miles.
Okay.
But now San Antonio is an enormous city. So from the San Antonio, like actual city limits, we're probably only about 5 miles.
Okay.
Oh, wow. And so, you know, there's a, we live in a part of the world where 5 miles is 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Cause you just hop on the freeway. So, you know, within, you know, a 10 minute drive, there's a Walmart, there's a HEB, there's a CVS, there's, so like, you know, we're pretty close to civilization.
Mm-hmm. I was struck when I went to San Antonio by the river downtown, the River Walk. I had never heard of it before. It was never on my radar at all that there was a river going through town and that it was lined with restaurants and stuff like that. And it was one of those things, like, I would have expected, like with Paris, you're like, you show up and you see the Eiffel Tower and you're like, nobody ever told me about this. That was kind of like that for me with San Antonio. It felt like something I should have heard about.
It's funny. People mostly only go there when they have like guests from out of town. Like, you're visiting. Let's go to the Riverwalk. And then otherwise, don't ever.
Okay.
We've been there. I think we've only been there twice. And once more when we were visiting, like to scope the place out. But once we had a friend in town visiting, and once as part of like the annual festival or whatever, they have a boat parade down there, and some of our neighbors invited us to go down with them. So
it was
kind of cool. But what about you? Still in Seattle?
Still in Seattle, in West Seattle, which is, you know, for after COVID shut everything down, the one bridge across to that part of town was closed down as well. So that part of town became kind of quieter, and you know, the commute to downtown turned into like a 50-minute commute instead of a 10-minute commute because you had to go around. But that's been opened up. You know, people are pretty much back to normal as far as things go, aside from some kind of, you know, mask scares and things like that. We are branching out. It looks like we're moving to Portland this summer.
What are mask scares?
Yeah. Well, what I mean by that is that somebody says that they heard that there's an outbreak or that there's a lot of COVID cases, or you know, like the school says that they're recommending masks again, that type of thing.
It's sort of amazing how regional all this stuff is, right?
Yeah.
Because when we moved down here in, you know, June 2021, it was like moving from a country like in the grip of COVID and masking everywhere and social distancing everywhere, to moving to a country where none of that, right?
So like the beginning of, or the scene in E.T. where the scientists come and help out and block off the house and everybody's wearing hazmat suits versus not that.
It took us a little while to like adjust. Like we would walk around and be like, no one's wearing that. Like it was weird, but like it was awesome. And it's funny. I think since I've been down here, I've worn a mask twice. Once was when I took my wife to the doctor, because her doctor's office requires masks.
Yeah.
Mine actually does not. And the dentist does not, but her doctor's office for some reason does. The second was, we took my daughter, about a year ago to get her ears pierced. And they say with a kid, you shouldn't go to the mall where they're going to like stick them with a gun with some like minimum wage kid who doesn't know what they're doing. They say, go to like the tattoo parlor, because that's where people, that's where the expert piercers are.
Sure.
And they did it. They did do a nice job there, but, they made us wear masks in the tattoo shop because that was a tattoo shop rule.
We're doing that tomorrow because our daughter, our older, is turning 11 on Monday, and one of the presents for her is pierced ears. So same sort of thing. We're going to a tattoo parlor up in the U District here in Seattle. My wife talked to me about it, and I was like, she's like, what are your feelings about this? And I said, I mean, the main thing for me is like, I don't really want to take her someplace where it's like, you know, strong, freaked out tattoo culture and like adult themed stuff all around, and like suicide girls stuff. So we found something that sounded reasonable. The kid across the street went up there, and it was very respectful and nice. So,
I mean, they were super nice at this place. It's actually really funny. When my daughter was a baby, my wife wanted to get her ears pierced, and I said, "No way! Like, can't do that to a baby. Like, wait until she's old enough to consent to it, and she can like say this is something I want done and like understand it, and then we'll do it, right?" So then. Yeah. Then she becomes like 9 or so, and she's like, "Oh, I think I want my ears pierced, but I'm scared of it." She's like, "Why didn't you just do it to me when I was like too young to remember it?" Like, well, you know, I thought about that, but I had a good reason for not doing that.
Thought I was doing the right thing.
I know.
Yeah,
that's why parenting's hard.
Yeah. Yeah, we have birthdays this weekend, 2 birthdays. One was the younger daughter, her birthday was yesterday. The older one is Monday. So it's always like, you know, it falls on a weekend or something. So you can basically kiss the weekend goodbye. Parties all weekend.
So what are you doing these days for work?
Running an engineering team for a startup and kind of getting back to basics as far as how people are building applications now. Learned a lot about so-called serverless stuff. So basically kind of revamping how things were built when I got here, moving over to a lot more managed stuff on AWS using Amplify instead of, you know, hosting it yourself. So that's what I've been doing. Still doing open source stuff, kind of kicked that back into gear because that fell by the wayside for a while for people's personal reasons. Looking forward to retiring though. I mean, I'm really, really ready to stop working. So I don't know how I'm going to manage that. Yeah. I feel like, I'm ready to join the leisure class. Really would love to.
What's stopping you?
No money. I mean, I have to have some way to support 4 people and a dog. We got a dog too. I don't know.
What kind of dog?
He is some kind of mix that looks like a little bit of boxer, a little bit of southern black mouth cur or Malinois, something like that. Kind of tan colored, but a dark brown face.
What's the dog's name?
Murphy. He was a adopted guy from Anaheim, California.
We got a dog too, actually.
Yeah, what'd you get?
It was part of the, like, when we moved down here from Seattle, we had to give up our chickens. Which was, it turns out that you can't, well, 2 things. One, our HOA down here, everything's in HOA, doesn't allow chickens. But 2, it turns out that, like, if you want to transport chickens across state lines, the USDA has a lot of things to say about it. Huh. And it's, it's not something you want to sign up for, basically, regardless.
So, if you tried to show up in Texas with chickens, somebody would call in and report you, or?
I mean, probably they wouldn't, but legally, I think according to the Texas Department of Agriculture, like in order to bring chickens in from out of state, you have to get them a clean bill of health from a vet and get them vaccinated against X, Y, and Z and so on and so forth. So I hated having chickens. I like the eggs.
Did you dispose of them or did you gift them away? Or?
Yes. We gave them to our neighbor, and then I very deliberately avoided learning what she did with them because I don't know what she did with them. Yeah. And as far as my daughter is concerned, they're still like thriving and living their best life. And I just don't want to know. Sure. Don't want to know. So, sure. But here's the thing about chickens. And it's like, you know, there's this, there's this analogy for managing servers where they like, are they pets or are they cattle, right?
Yes, right.
Okay. With chickens, you really want them to be cattle, not pets. Mm-hmm. And we had 2 chickens, and that means they had names and they were pets and they had personalities, and you got to keep them alive, right?
Yeah, right.
Keeping chickens alive is a lot of work.
Oh, and I didn't know that.
Because there's lots of animals that want to eat them.
Okay, got it.
And so that means you have to keep them caged up. You have to make sure the cage is closed. You can't let them run around too much unsupervised, et cetera, right? Okay. Whereas if you have 20 chickens and you just bake in, hey, I've got 20 chickens, but I'm going to lose, a couple every now or then I imagine, I mean, 1, having 20 chickens is more of a pain, but 2, like there's, an ease of like, eh, something happens, something happens. I'm not going to get like too attached to any one of them, right?
It's like a tithing at that point, or you know, pouring one out for the homies.
Yeah, it's just like I got so many. Like if I lose a couple, who cares? I'll replace them. And chickens, they're not like warm, cuddly creatures. They're they're mean, selfish, vicious predator.
Yeah. They bite and scratch and kick. And they eat worms too, right?
They're ravenous hunters, like
horrible carnivores. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can see how they used to be dinosaurs, right? But yeah, that was probably the thing that brought them the greatest joy was getting to hunt worms. And they're anyway, as part of the deal with my daughter, so she was not super enthused about the move, not for like great reasons, mostly for just like I don't like change reasons, but she did not want to give up the chickens. And so as part of that, we promised her we would get a dog if we moved down here.
Oh,
which we did.
Yeah. 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 What kind is it? What's the dog's name?
It's a golden doodle.
Oh yeah. Okay.
She's extremely cute and she's extremely a pain in the ass.
Okay. Old or like how old?
No. She's young. Like about to turn 2.
Okay. Yeah. That's like our dog.
So she's very cute and she's very smart. And she's very energetic and she's a pain in the ass.
Right. Yeah. Our dog is really, really strong and very impulsive. And he has a real bad habit of jumping up. Even if you think you've gotten him calmed down, you pet him, he's sitting, but he's not peaceful. As soon as you stop petting him, he will jump up and he's you know, knocked people's chins a few times.
That's okay. How big?
He's about 60 pounds.
Okay, ours is about 55, so.
Yeah, a lot of dog.
Yep.
A lot of dog. And, you know, I am not a dog person. I've never had a dog before.
So I mean, same with me. I've never had a dog before either.
It's been interesting. I've had cats, and I've never seen the appeal. We tried dog sitting a couple of times, and I saw the appeal doing the dog sitting because just the simple act of when you get up in the morning and down the hall, a dog sees you and all of a sudden starts wagging his tail. Like that moment kind of, it helped me understand the appeal. And at this point, I would really hate losing the dog.
Yeah, no, I get it. The dog's same here. She's made herself a part of the family. So
yeah. Yeah.
So are you still on Twitter? Did you quit when Elon took it over?
That was a funny time. It seems like so long ago. No, I just stayed on there and kept checking it. And it's funny. It sort of seems like it got really raucous for a while. A lot of anger, a lot of people being mad, and then it seemed to calm down.
No, there's still a lot of people mad on Twitter.
Well, but see, I'm so vigilant on blocking people. So my pattern is if I see something that I find offensive or annoying, I will often block the person. So it's pretty ruthless. And, I know that there are people that, that I like in person who I have blocked for just because of the spur of the moment, something that they said or reposted. Offended me, and it's all I'll just go just scorch the area, you know. And it's
does that ever come up in real life, like you're getting a beer with someone and they're like, hey, by the way, why'd you block me on Twitter?
No. But you know, but I I don't know if anybody cares. I don't feel like it doesn't have to be. It's not meant as I guess it's one of those things. I need a disclaimer. Blocking does not imply that I disapprove of you as a person or something, you know, like.
Yeah,
like retweets do not equal endorsements. I need something that's kind of the opposite of that.
Don't take the block personally. I'm always worried that that I'm going to meet someone like at a networking event or whatever, and give them my Twitter, and they're going to look it up and be like, yeah. So I don't block that many people, but I'm always worried they're going to look me up and be like, oh, I have you blocked. Because a lot of people have me blocked.
Right.
Yeah,
I've encountered a couple of things where I went to look at something and this person has limited who can see their tweets for whatever reason, and I don't know what that means, if that is an accident or somebody saw something I did and reacted. I don't know. I have no idea. There's no transparency. No transparency that I know of. So,
all right. You didn't try out Mastodon?
I tried. I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't get into it. I mean, it seems
like you got to choose the right server, the one that like really reflects you as a person.
Well, that's the other one. Like, I don't know. There's like data folks, Mastodon. There's all sorts of things. There's Mastodon.lol. I saw that person said that they're gonna torch their server because somebody's being mean to them.
Yep.
So yeah, I don't know. I don't understand what federation means, and I can't be asked to figure out. I mean, it just seems like a lot of work. And at this point, I'm just defaulting to what I have going and that status quo.
No, I'm the same way. I set up an account actually probably years ago on one of the main Mastodon instances, and then you know I went to check it out again when all the recent stuff happened. And I was reading the rules. It's like no content that's illegal in Germany. I'm like, how the hell am I supposed to keep track of what's legal and illegal in Germany? Like,
yeah, you have to implement GDPR on your own.
Right. So I was like, yeah, I don't need. And you know, it seems like every server I look at, it has some like arcane combination of rules and beefs. And like, hey, yeah, by the way, here are the servers that we don't talk to. We've defederated this server and we don't allow retweets from this server and things like that. It's very similar to the stories that my sixth grader brings home. It's like, oh, well, you know, this girl is not talking to this girl anymore. And this other girl, you know, said that she doesn't want anything to do with this other girl. And, you know, I should tell her to start using the word defederated to describe that. She's like, oh, yeah, yeah. You know, Faith defederated Brittany at school today.
She retweeted something.
Yeah. I don't think it's called
Is it really called retweet?
No, I think it's called boosted. Ugh. I know retweet is a better name than boost. I thought I read somewhere that like even the name toot, like someone like dared the creator to call it that, and yeah, so he did, and now he regrets it. Or
yeah, I don't know. I would too.
What would you call it?
What would I have called it? I don't know. I mean, masters. I don't know. I don't know. I have popped in there every once in a while, and I just I think I don't have a lot of extra room for getting used to a new environment at this point. And what I'm, you know, what my status quo is good enough. You know, I think I have about 3,500 accounts blocked on Twitter, and so it's a peaceful, gentle, beautiful experience for me, unlike apparently what most people experience. I don't see a lot of angry stuff anymore, which is great.
That is good. Yeah, maybe we're getting to that age where you just start to lose track of things, or not lose track, but you just like you can't deal with new things, right?
Yeah, I think that I mean, at this point, I am on the downswing on a lifetime, and so I'm retreating from exciting new stuff, getting more into doing music and stuff with the family, and not really. I don't have a lot of desire to learn how to do Mastodon.
It's actually funny. Like, speaking of feeling old, I was reading an article earlier today about Borg. I don't even know if it's a real thing, but there's an article about it, so it's a real thing.
Yeah.
Borg stands for Blackout Rage Gallon. It's a drinking trend that first went viral during the pandemic before resurfacing on TikTok.
Yeah.
Students fill empty milk jugs with a blend of half water, half vodka, caffeine drinks, and flavor enhancers.
Wow.
And they just carry it around to parties, and this is my Borg. And everyone's got like their own proprietary mix. And, you know, I'm not feeling like partying too much tonight, so I'll maybe do like a quarter vodka and three quarters water.
Oh.
And so here's it. So I read an article about this today. And for all I know, it's just someone made it up, right? Like,
yeah,
maybe it's fake. I don't know.
Like the cat litter in the public restrooms at school, I think was
right. So, yeah. So I don't even know if this is like a real thing, but like I read an article. It's like, wow, I feel old because I've heard of Borg. My kid didn't tell me. I guess it's not big in sixth grade.
No.
Either. I hope it's not big in
They're more to ever clear in sixth grade, right?
Yeah, yeah. So speaking of sixth grade, you know, anyone who's been listening to this podcast for a long time knows about me and unschooling and Sudbury yes. School and everything. And so the big news on that front is that right about a year ago, we put our daughter in public school.
Yeah. How'd that go?
She took to it like immediately.
Yeah. What grade is she in now?
Sixth grade. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she do it. She here where we live, the elementary school goes up to fifth grade and then middle school is 6 to 8 and then high school is 9 through 12. So,
so you moved down there, did some more unschooling and then did.
Okay. We're doing a bunch of like these online neo schools.
Yeah.
And we weren't that happy with any of them for various reasons. And she wasn't getting what she needed socially out of them.
Yeah.
And she, like, the idea was, oh, well, she'll develop all these weird online friendships. Then we started to realize that wasn't like a good strategy.
Like, maybe that's better okay when you're my age. That's
exactly. Fine. But no, actually, it's funny. Like, since like when I was in Seattle, I didn't have many friends I hung out with in person either. Like, I'd hang out with you every once in a while, but we're pretty far away from each other. But here, like, I hang out with people in person all the time.
Yeah.
So,
different shape and neighborhood will shape your.
It's just it's like it's amazing how different things it are down here. Like it's funny. San Antonio is not like a big tech city, right? It's a big like military city, and oil and gas, and they have like
rack space down there. Maybe
they are, but like they're always like laying people off and outsourcing stuff to India. So
okay,
mm-hmm. I see news articles about it. And then there's actually a fair amount of cybersecurity companies here, I guess, because of the military ties. But it's not like, I mean, there is a tiny startup scene, but there's not like big tech or anything. So like all the people I know down here, like I've told them what I do, but like they've mentally categorized it as IT. So people are like, "You work in IT, right?" Yep. And I'm like, "It's not really." I was like, "No, I'm a machine learning engineer with a focus on natural language processing."
Right.
And they're like, "What?" I was like, "Yeah, I work in IT."
Yeah.
It's like there's a sense in which it's refreshing, right? Like in Seattle, you go to Starbucks and people are like, "Okay, what are you, a front engineer, back end engineer, full stack? Like, what are you doing, serverless shit?" Whereas here, it's like, "Oh, you work in IT?" I'm like, Yep,
pretty much.
Like, "Oh, I have a buddy who works in IT at Valero. Like, you guys should meet up."
Yeah. I think that Seattle is very much special that way. I'm sure there are other cities. There are other cities where technology gets built, I'm sure.
No. I mean, Austin is much closer to Seattle along that front. But
yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. But that's like a couple hours from here. So I go up there, you know, fairly frequently, but like, not like every week.
I was in Austin for that conference, and it seemed like a really small city to me. I didn't spend enough time to really walk around or do anything. It was just like, you know, conference and hotel and that's it.
You're wrong. Austin is, I think, the 12th biggest city in the country.
Okay. It felt small. Because
were you like downtown near the university? Like, yeah, downtown's not that big, but like the city goes way out in every direction. Okay.
All right. Yeah. So, I mean, I probably only moved within, you know, 4 blocks. So no one, that's why it felt small.
Yeah. It felt like it was only 4 blocks big.
Yeah. I didn't have any breakfast burritos either, which apparently it's a huge miss.
Yeah. And it's even a bigger thing in San Antonio, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Breakfast tacos or breakfast burritos?
I guess breakfast tacos. What's the difference though?
One would be open, one would be wrapped up.
Yeah, but sure. I mean, that's it's not much of a distinction. But yeah, breakfast tacos are big here. If you ever come down, I can take you to some good places. I know a couple good ones.
Yeah,
that's actually the one thing I miss about Seattle is all my ethnic foods.
Mm-hmm.
Like down here, there's the Mexican food and the Tex-Mex is really good and the barbecue is really good, but then like. The Asian food is not as good.
Yeah.
Indian, Thai. They have it, but it's just not great. We went out for dim sum and it was like, eh, like they had all the right items on the menu, but they weren't like that good.
My office here is right on the border of the International District, which is Seattle's Chinatown. And I've had some good dumplings in there. But one of the places that I used to go and have a great time is boarded up. You know, there's plywood on the windows. And I went there a while, like a year, last year. And it had declined. It wasn't good. It didn't taste good. It was bad. So I don't know if that's... I'm not saying that reflects on all of Seattle's cuisine, but I'm just thinking.
Yeah, no, I think we got spoiled up in Bothell too, because it's not like Bothell has like super great restaurants, but it had one Thai restaurant that was like incredible, one Korean restaurant that was incredible, one Indian restaurant that was like really good. So like you, and then one like kind of Pan Asian sandwich place that was really good. So like, it's not that every restaurant up there was amazing, but there was like one of each.
Yeah.
We actually found an Ethiopian place down here that we like pretty good, but last time I tried to go there, it was closed.
Yeah, there's one of those in the market here at Peck Place.
So how is Seattle? Is it as sort of like gritty and crimey and boarded up as people say?
It got pretty bad, and then it's gotten better. You remember Third at Pike and Pine? That bus stop.
Okay. Very well.
So for a while.
I used to live two blocks from there.
Okay. And you know that you've seen the cartoon. There's cartoons about it. And there was an account, a Twitter account, Third and Pine or something. And it was just like, it was like police blotter all day long. So it felt for a while like Third at Pike and Pine kind of just went throughout the whole city. Of course, we had the whole autonomous zone in Capitol Hill. I don't know if you were here for that.
I think I was, actually, although I lived far enough from Capitol
Hill.
I didn't make it down there.
So you didn't show up for any government meetings there?
No, I lived out in the burbs.
Right. So for a while, I mean, it didn't affect me personally where I lived. I did drive through one time, and I was just to see what it looks like when three city blocks get taken over. I would say that there is a lot more open air drug use on the street and tent encampments than I had ever seen here. A lot more RV living, with the attendant piles of garbage and rats and whatnot. A friend of mine has a shop here in Pioneer Square, and he said that there was, at the worst of it, there was an entire encampment outside his business, and there was like, there was people doing business like sex trade, in tents and stuff like that. That it took a long time for that to get addressed. Even, calling the police said there's nothing we can do about it. Which is wild. It does seem like the new mayor has made it a priority to help that stuff get taken care of, and a lot of actually vigilante work by people who are having concrete barriers installed outside their homes and businesses to prevent RVs from parking there and things like that. So there's some hand-wringing about that being inequitable and not legal, but people got pretty fed up with how bad it got. So it seems like it's getting better.
All right, well, good luck to you on that.
Thank you.
So we should probably talk about some like data science kind of stuff. This is a podcast about data science.
That's what it says in the title, right?
Right.
Yeah, what's a good topic these days?
So I'll tell you that I have two things that I've been thinking about recently. So one at my last job, which I just got laid off from, I think I mentioned that. And I'm looking for a new job.
So condolences and congrats.
I think I mentioned that too, that I'm looking for a new job. I did a lot of pandas, for various reasons. in a way, it was like my notebooks thing all over again, right? Where yeah. I was like, this is a tool that everyone uses, and like, I hate it. And not I hate it, but like, kind of, yeah. I was like, this can't be the best way to do this. Like, yeah. this API doesn't make sense. It's basically, I want to do something, I'm just going to guess at the API. Can't figure it out. I'll ask ChatGPT. It'll tell me things that don't work.
Yeah.
That makes shit up. And
parameters, some flags are going to have an underscore between words. Some won't have one. Some will be, it's all over the map.
Yeah, there's that. So I started investigating this. There's this library called Polars, which is a different data frame library that's written in Rust, but it has Python bindings. So you use it in Python the same way. But it doesn't have indexes at all. And on their first page, it basically says, you know, there's like a FAQ. It's like, I'm coming from Pandas. Like, where are the indexes? And they're like, you don't need indexes. Prove us wrong.
Oh. Okay.
And so basically, you know, they're like, you don't need indexes, right?
Yeah.
And it's true, like in Pandas, you know, you do a group by, and now you get something where what you group by isn't an index. And if you don't want it there, then you got to do extra work to get it out of the index. And, you know, in Polars, you do a group by and you get a new data frame that has that column as one of the columns. And that's it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I started to get into that. And it's different in a lot of ways. And so I'm still a little bit wrapping my head around it, but I got excited around this idea of, I like these Emperor New Clothes situations where you can be like, the Emperor is wearing no clothes. And you know, if anything, my Jupyter Notebooks experience, sort of gave me some confidence that my intuitions on some of these things are not necessarily idiosyncratic to me. And that if I think something like feels like a bad experience, probably there's other people out there who are also thinking that, but maybe not saying it. Right.
I've had people really not enjoy when I say how much I hate Pandas, and I won't say I've used it more than, not much, less than 40 hours in my life. Here's why. Every time I try to, everything I try to do is counterintuitive or wrong or doesn't work or it doesn't. I've never gotten over some kind of Pandas hump, which means that I'm always wondering why they ever did it like that. And so, for instance, trying to join two data frames, you look it up and there's no simple, just here's how you do a join. It seems like the docs are geared to somebody who's done different things than I have. That's how bad it is for me.
There's that. And there's also the fact that at this point, the API seems incredibly busy. Like if you go look at a data frame, there's so many methods on a data frame, and like they have similar names and you pick the wrong one. So why did you use merge instead of join? And maybe at some point I'll give a talk on it at Panda. If I don't know if there's a PandasCon, but if there's a PandasCon, maybe I'll write a talk and give it, or maybe not, because I don't need to make the same joke twice necessarily. But
I'll take a look at Polar. So thanks for that.
Yeah, it's an interesting model, and I haven't decided that it's the right model, but it's certainly interesting to think about. So I would say check it out. I'm intrigued by it. And that's about as far as I'll endorse it. The other thing I'm excited about, along with everyone else, is ChatGPT.
Oh yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah. So like, it's funny, you know, I was working at AI2 doing cutting edge NLP stuff when the original GPT came out, when the original BERT came out, and so on and so forth. So I've been kind of in the midst of all these things, right? Yeah. And so like when BERT came out, you're like, wow, that's like, that's impressive. And, you know, you immediately wanted to adopt it everywhere you were doing NLP stuff because it worked so much better than everything that came before you. But it's not like, it wasn't like, okay, that breaks everything, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas with the chat, and even with GPT-3, like, I don't know, maybe it's failure of imagination on my part, but you know, when I played with it, I didn't think, oh gosh, that breaks everything. When I started playing with ChatGPT, which is sort of GPT-3 with some prompt engineering and like a nicer UX or whatever.
Yeah.
That was when I had my that breaks everything moment. And like one of the obvious ones is school, right? So whenever, you know, whenever my daughter brings home basically a writing assignment, so like, so she came home with an assignment, write a poem about the main character in some book she read at school, some book I'd never heard of, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, Harry Potter where like everyone's heard of it and mm-hmm. everyone's angry about it. It's just some random book about mm-hmm. some girl in Afghanistan. And so I fed that prompt into ChatGPT and it wrote a poem. And I showed it to my daughter. I was like, could you have turned in this poem? She's like, no, that'd be cheating. I was like, okay, but forget about that. Like, would this be a reasonable poem? Is this a reasonable answer to your question? And she said, yes, it's 100% a reasonable answer. And so now whenever she brings home like a little writing assignment like that, I plug it into ChatGPT and I show it to her. I was like, is this a reasonable answer? Cause I haven't read the book, so I don't know what's reasonable. And she's like, yeah, that's perfectly reasonable. And I think
undetectable as plagiarism or cheating.
Well, some people say they can detect it, but I think, you know, right now, not all the parents in that classroom are as GPT savvy and or scrupulous as we are, but you know, a year from now, forget about it. And so like these homework assignments are like defunct, right? Because you're basically saying although it's funny, so in math they have to do long division, right?
Yeah,
so they did long division and they like, even after they learn long division, they still have to do it. So if they get like a word problem, you know, like 4 months later, that's like, oh, you know, Johnny has 1200 eggs and 14 eggs go in a car, like, and so she'll be sitting there like doing all this stuff. And I'm like, why don't you just use a calculator? She's like, oh, we're not allowed to use a calculator. Like, why the hell not? Right. Like, it's stupid. Like you need to learn how to do long division, but once you know how to do it, like why waste your time? She's like, no, we're not allowed to, we got to.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
But I'm sure there's some other kids who are using calculators. So those are the kids who will be using ChatGPT.
Right. Yeah, I'm curious about how it is going to affect how people write software too. It seems like people latched onto that too. I looked at Copilot a little bit, just how it's done. And that comes out of, they're using an OpenAI model too called Codex. Someone told me that there is a couple of class action lawsuits against GitHub for training their model on GPL license code.
Yeah, so it's actually really interesting, right? Because I've been using Copilot basically since it came out. I was a very early like beta tester of it.
Yeah,
and I love it. Like it's so good.
Yeah.
But here's the interesting thing: is that its code is, let's say, 95% correct.
Right.
And that means you need someone to use it who can tell is it correct or is it not correct, and fix it if it's not, right?
Yeah.
And so I can do that, and so what it means is that it writes a lot of boilerplate for me, right? And that saves me so much time than just writing. It'll like write, you know, 20 lines of boilerplate. I'll scan it, same way as if I'm doing a code review, like that looks right, or I missed this, but I'll fix it or whatever. And it saves me a ton of time. But if you wrote all your code that way without like having the ability to check in and say, is this right? Your code would, if you're lucky, it wouldn't work. If you're unlucky, it would work and it would do the wrong thing.
Yeah, they have hidden bugs all over the place.
So, I'm a huge enthusiast of Copilot. Now, what's interesting is that I think, you know, a lot of bigger companies are going to be worried over these IP issues, right? And say, one, the IP issues, and two, the fact that you're sending code to GitHub and you know, for it to read and make predictions, right? Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to say, no, you can't use it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can tell you that some of the big places I've just been working, I would not have been allowed to use it. And, you know, it would have been like a CIO level decision about whether people should be allowed to use it. And mm-hmm. it would take me months to get that audience with the CIO, and it would take them months to just, it would never happen. But you're going to have small companies that don't care about that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder if you'll see this big bifurcation in developer experience between, here's people who work at big companies and they can't use these tools, right? And here's people who work at small companies and they can use these tools. And, you know, if I'm a developer, which I am, and you tell me, gosh, you can go work at this big company, but like you can't use any good tooling. Well, that said, I just went to big companies where I couldn't use good tooling anyway, even independent of Copilot. But
yeah,
but I think about it harder now. And will it give the smaller companies an advantage? I don't know.
A little bit. I mean, a little bit. If you're requiring everybody to either cut and paste their own stuff from stuff they've done before, or type it out by hand, yeah, it's going to take you longer to do things.
I will tell you, it's actually been a little bit of frustration for me. I've been hacking on building like a website basically using the framework called Astro, which is sort of an interesting framework, but that's not super important. But so I'm writing it out, and you're writing all sorts of like Java, all these imports, and you have to import your components from like relative paths or whatever. And so the IDE wants to help you doing these automatic completions on your imports.
Yeah.
But Copilot also wants to help you doing the automatic completions on your imports.
Yeah.
And I'm never sure if the suggestion is coming from the IDE or from the Copilot. Oh. And Copilot doesn't get the paths right because it doesn't know like how my directory structure is set up. And so that's actually caused me some grief, and I have to figure out how to deal with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Like if you, like in the instance you're talking about with the homework, like if you had a calculator that did the right answer 95% of the time, would it help you in your studies? And the answer is probably no, because if you're relying on it to do big multiplications and divisions, like then you just flip a die and all of a sudden your answer is wrong. It's probably not that great, but this is different, right? So it can be close enough, and when you scan it, you can almost like see it do the work, right? You can trace back and see what it's doing then.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is that like for a program, you know, for the most part, either if it's got a big enough error in it, it's not going to run, right?
Yeah.
And so if something goes like really wrong, it's not going to run. Whereas if you're writing a poem about some story about some girl from Afghanistan, like what's an error? An error is maybe you get one of the facts wrong in your poem, right?
Like the wrong, like a city from another country or something. Yeah.
Yeah, but like it's still a poem. And it's still mostly about that. And is the teacher going to read it carefully enough to even pick that up?
Yeah.
Probably
well,
not.
What's school for? It comes back to that, right?
Socialization is my perspective.
Stick care.
I know. My daughter will come home and I was like, okay, did you get the contact information for your friend so we can like set up a play date? She's like, no, but I got 100 on my test. I'm like, look, what's important here? It's like, I don't care about the test. Go out and like get that contact information. I'm not sending you to school to get test scores. I'm sending you to school to make friends.
Right. Get on it. Yeah. Ours is just finishing up fifth grade this year. It'll be middle school next year. Apparently nobody's been really reading through. So the problem with being a conscientious student is that nobody checks your work that carefully. And she is. She's always been a huge fan of school, like loves it. And for me, I'm like, well, I don't know where you got that because you didn't get it from me. But my wife, a couple weeks ago, opened up some of her schoolwork. And, you know, there's workbooks and things like that. And apparently this kid has been writing smart aleck answers in all of her homework. Like, you know, describe an example of blah, blah, blah. And the answer is no. Things like that, like, or how would you explain to your friend such and such? I wouldn't, because my friend wouldn't care about that. You know, that kind of smart. And so nobody's read it. Nobody's checked on the work or anything. So we're trying to figure out right now if there's any action we should take on that, or whether we should just let it be or whatever. I don't know. I don't have a decision yet.
Yeah. It's hard, right?
Should my kid get away with making smart aleck remarks in homework? Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely. So I might not even mention it, you know?
Yeah, it's funny, like, from my perspective, because I have another, like, you know, quiet girl who's, like, well-behaved. And the problem with that is that the sixth grade boys are not well behaved. They're very poorly behaved. Right. And the teachers, their like number one thing is, I'm going to separate them, right? And so here's the worst boy in the class, and he's causing all sorts of trouble. So what am I going to do? I know, I'll put him at the desk with like the quiet, well-behaved girl, because how much trouble can he cause there? So she's always like, she'll come up, she's like, I'm so excited. Like, I got the rearranged desk. I'm sitting by my friend in this class, and she's like super excited about it. And she'll come home the next day, and she's like, the boys are being bad, so they moved like the worst kid next to me, and now I have to sit at a table with them. So that keeps happening.
Yeah, I hear stories about how the boys are behaving, and apparently they're disruptive. They never get in line. Smart aleck stuff. And there's a couple of kids in class who have been boyfriend and girlfriend, and they've broken up, and they've gotten back together. And I asked her and her friend, like, oh, okay, well, are other kids dating in fifth grade? They're like, no. So for them, there's like, they already know that it's like a charged issue. Pretty interesting to watch.
Yeah, some of these kids need corporal punishment, for being honest. But
at least the stocks.
Yeah. So some sort of shaming. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. ChatGPT. What else is happening in data science? Twitter's blown up or imploding, apparently.
Yeah.
I have friends who have been laid off of there. I'm sure you do too. And I can't tell what the direction is going to be. Whether that site is just going to be a success story where you slash 90% of the engineering team, and because everybody did such a great job, it just keeps running, or whether that was sort of a self-fulfilling need that, you know, that many engineers kind of created a system that needs that many engineers. And at this point, it might make sense to just serve static pages off a CDN or what have you. I'm curious to see how it goes.
Yeah, my guess, and this is not a very educated guess, is that there's got to be some private equity people out there who are looking at that and thinking, wow, like, they got rid of a lot of people and the site's still running, right?
Yeah.
And then asking, what are some other businesses that are like that, right?
Right.
And obviously private equity is not going to acquire Google or Facebook or whatever, but you know, there are companies at the private equity scale that are like that. And I wouldn't be surprised if you saw more of that. Now, you know, it's risky if you don't have Elon Musk's network and tech friends and whatever to go in and say, I'm going to be able to, you know, get rid of all these engineers and keep things still working. But you can never know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how. I'll tell you that when you're looking for a job and every morning you open up the news and you're like, oh, here's another company that's doing 8% layoffs, and here's another company that's doing 7% layoffs. It's not exactly encouraging, but
yeah, it does seem like that whether, you know, whatever it was, the perfect or imperfect storm of macroeconomics and loud, you know, tech news, it seems like it's, people are taking that opportunity to change their minds about some recent hires maybe, or some recent directions. I can't tell if it's a real thing or not.
I mean, well, so here's the thing. It's definitely a real thing in the sense that, like, now that everyone else is doing it, they can get away with it.
Yeah.
Now I've also seen charts that show, like, if you compare headcounts to like beginning of 2021, they're still like up quite a bit.
Yeah.
So it's not like we're undoing the last 10 years of the internet. It's like we're undoing the last 1 year of the internet, which, you know, that makes sense. And like, I'm 100% willing to believe that a lot of these places like way overhired and had all these people they don't need and you know, had 2 million layers of middle management. It's just that it sucks when you suddenly have like, you know, 20,000 other people out there like looking for jobs at the same time you are. But
yeah,
that's life.
Yep.
Maybe I'll become a woodworker.
Yeah, you could. You're getting into decks and what else are you doing? Firewood these days? Yes.
Firewood. I've started trying to build stuff in my garage. The problem is I suck at it. Like everything I cut is crooked and everything I put together is crooked and
hard.
The legs don't all reach the ground and things like that.
Yeah, it's hard.
I built myself this work table. from a plan that's like the world's easiest work table. Sure. Like it's like you can build it in an hour. I think it took me about 10 hours, but, but it's like, take the, like, you know, you build the frame and then take a piece of MDF and put it on the bottom and be the bottom shelf. And the problem is that the bottom four boards are not actually like coplanar. And so it's basically, okay, I can't actually attach the shelf as it is. I have to like put clamps all the way around it so that everything sort of is flattish. And then anyway, I think I'll get better, but I hope I get better. I'm pretty bad at it right now.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's nowhere to go but up. I mean, I made a workbench. I forget when it was, a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, nice big solid workbench. And, that was really satisfying. But I haven't used it much for doing things, but I have stored a lot of things on top of it.
That's why I finally put the bottom shelf on, because I was storing too many things on top of it. So I needed to move them below so I could actually do it. But I'm in the middle of building like a firewood rack. We've been using firewood when it was cold. Yeah. And I'm going to build a couple variations of outdoor chairs for the backyard and basically stuff that can be crappy and doesn't matter.
Yep.
Cool. No, I'm not building kitchen cabinets or anything.
No. Yeah. That stuff's hard. It's real hard. Yeah.
All right, man. Next time we should probably have a guest.
Yeah. I don't know who we would even have on at this
point. Yeah. So, people out there listening, if you have someone, you want us to have as a guest, let us know. Or if you want to be a guest, let us know. I have some ideas, actually. I won't say them now because then it'll be embarrassing if I ask them and they say no and we don't get them on the show. But I have some ideas of some people who I think could be actually pretty interesting. So
cool. Awesome. Well, good to talk to you again.
It's been fun to catch up. It's been way too long. I know. We should do this more often. Especially now with this cool new Google Meet setup.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not too hard to actually upload the podcast from this, but I think it should be okay.
Good luck. All right. Good to talk to you.
All right, man. Take care.
Ciao.